My name's Charles Trevor-Guinney. Mark asked me to chair this particular panel. I'm involved with Crouching Wells Foundation from the beginning as a friend of Alan McFarlane. I'm not an anthropologist myself, I was a publisher. But when I was a publisher, I did use the internet at a very, very early stage for the delivery of Trevor-Guinney databases. And so there's always been a subject of great interest to me. But I don't think that back in the early 90s, cited though we were by the internet, anybody could have imagined how quickly and pervasively it would become part of our, really all our lives. It must be the most powerful tool that we've ever had for the dissemination and storage of and sharing of information, as well as storage of information. Far more powerful than the printing press. The status of books is changing very, very rapidly in relation to the internet. But the book is still very much with us. And our first speaker, Rupert Gatti, of Open Book Publishers, is one of the new publishers who are looking at the book in the context of the internet and are being very skillful and might be clever and imaginative in the way that they're combining book technologies and production with the delivery of digital information. Rupert is going to talk about the joint book series with the World Oral Literature Project, which I think all of you know is Mark Turin's project, which is very closely related to this workshop. Rupert is a fellow of Trinity College, Cambridge, and director of economic studies when he's not being a publisher. So, Rupert, would you like to start? And one more thing, we are going to have questions for each speaker at the end of each of the speaker's sessions, rather than grouping it all at the end. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And thank you for inviting me to be here and be part of this. I'm an economist at Trinity. I'm not a publisher, and part of the motivation of what we're doing here is to say, listen, it's time for academia to really take charge of dissemination a little bit more and not delegate it off, and at least really think about what we can be doing ourselves as a group. And what we need to pass off, and where we need to pass that off, and so it's been, this was one of the motivations for starting up Open Book Publishers, which we can talk about a little bit more. But it's really it's been enormous fun and enjoyment to be part of this World Oral Literature series, and to be thinking about how to create this as an academic dissemination platform, and what we need to be doing with our research and with our data to be able to bring it together and think about how people can access it, how people can use it, and who we're interacting with. And so that, I think, you know, on a broader framework, this series is not about books and about archives, and it's not necessarily about any individual component, but it's about what academia can be doing to be interacting with the wider community, to be interacting with each other, and to be interacting with the various components of the research process, be it the archives, be it the publication, be it post-publication communications. And so this is the first step, and we're pretty excited to be working on that step. I mean, just quickly, you know, we all know that academic publishing is changing, and the whole world is changing around us. We've got the academic springs that, you know, and when the Economist comes along and says it's time for free access to, you know, at that point when the Economist is saying that, you think, wow, actually, you know, things have changed. And we've got Harvard University saying it cannot any longer afford to run an academic library. You know, if Harvard can't do it, then, you know, we've got some serious problems. And so this sort of academic spring that the Guardian has been talking about has got a number of components to it, and just to think through quickly, the one is that the existing publishing model cannot work. It's too expensive, and it's a system which has got to change. The second is that there is a lot of debate saying, look, publicly funded research should be made publicly available. And the third is this sort of the academic discontent about the way that commercialization of the dissemination process impacts on the research itself, either directly by taking harsh funds or indirectly, and it's something I want to think about a little bit more, about controlling the research agenda and controlling access and the direction of the research agenda. And so the typical publishing model was designed with this type of framework where you've got the sort of geeky professor sitting there who's doing some research, he's writing a book, and the book gets published, and there's a printing and publishing process that goes along there, and it's read by, you know, another two geeky professors who cite it, and back it goes. And that's, you know, that's our citation cycle. And that's our whole promotion structure. Everything in academia is based around this very, very simple system, which is gone. Oh, it should have gone. It hasn't gone. We've got to get rid of it. What's left is all everybody else is out there, and they're prevented from accessing it because of these paywalls. Now, paywalls were there for all sorts of reasons, and I'm an economist, I can bore for a while on that, but we're preventing access to that whole cycle from a lot of people out there who are interested. Not least, we've got all these students that come in that study anthropology, they all get jobs in the city, and we say, you can't any longer access the journals to keep interested in the stuff you study. And so, the digital world has changed dramatically, not only what we're doing at the archiving level, that it's all digitalized, and that allows us to do so much more, and we'll see, in the whole conference, a lot of it is about what can be done at that archiving level and the digitalization process. But it's also changing our dissemination structure and how we can access these. It's changing the whole way that we can access, other people can access that through these new frameworks. And not only that, it changes the way the geeky professor is creating their research to start with. And it's become, if I change these arrows around, it's now actually quite a task. Given that the geeky professor has just written it all there on the computer screen, it's really easy to get it out to these people. It's really hard to put it behind a paywall and ship it out in restricted ways. But that's where we are. And that's what we've allowed to happen. And so we've got to think, what can we do as a community to get rid of this and involve these people a little bit more? On top of that, we've now got the opportunity that these people are wanting to interact not only with the book, but also with the geeky professor, but also with the research data. And I was interested in some of the abstracts for some of the later talks, where people were talking about the commentary that they were getting on their archiving. They were getting the commentary from the communities that had access to the archive for the first time, and that was improving and updating the archive material there. You can only do that if these people have access to that. And you can really harness in on that. And so we've got to be really thinking, how do we involve the community, much broader community than those of us who are sitting in a, you know, university-connected world, how can we involve them in this whole process? So what we're trying to do with this oral literature series, a step in that direction, is to say, listen, what we want to do is bring everything together into the oral literature project-type framework, and have a platform where anybody, be they geeky professors or be they the tribes people, or be they interested ex-students of whatever, or be they, you know, somebody who's just interested, can come through and say, look, here is a reputable, respectable site that's got academic kudos here. It's not just any old stuff that's come around. And it's coordinating the archives, it's coordinating access to the archives, and it's coordinating communication between all these people through that network. And that's sort of roughly the structure that we're trying to put together. Okay, so Open Book Publishers, who are we? As I said, we're a bunch of academics who just had enough of saying enough and said, if nobody else is going to do it, we've just got to stop complaining and get on with it. And so it's a community interest company, so it's a non-regulated non-profit, And what we're trying to do at this stage is making sure that publications are open access, that they're all free to read online, that it's Creative Commons licenses, that so people can do things with the text afterwards, that we've got paperback and hardback and digital editions that are available, and we sell those at much different prices to normal. We've got to maintain a peer review and academic kudos, and we've got to be able to connect to online resources so that the people coming in, if research is going to bring people into the whole area, and we're going to say as humanities, count us. You know, it's not, academia is not all about sciences and about discovering new cancer drugs. You know, that's great, but you know what? Humanities have got an impact. We've got to bring these people in and we've got to let them engage with the debate. And so that's where we need to be connecting to the online resources in the background. So the first book in this series is, as was said, a reprint of Ruth's, and it's fantastic that Ruth is here, Ruth's Oral Literature in Africa, which was published in the 1970s. I'm sure you all know, classic work. But associated with that, not only is it out of print, so that's a bad thing in itself, but when it came out, you know, Ruth's got a whole bunch of tapes and tapes and tapes of stuff that she taped, of people singing and people talking and kids reciting nursery rhymes and groups dancing, and she's got all those tapes, and you know where they were? They were in a, you know, they're in a cupboard. but they're not anymore. You know, they're now digitalised, they're put online. So now we can say, look, there's this classic work, and you know what? There's also all this material that's associated with that work that we can connect you through to. We've got a whole bunch of images that she took when she was out there on fieldwork. We can connect you through to those as well. And so we can bring new readers in to the work, because it's free to read online. We can bring people in, and we can connect them to the original work, and we can connect them to, hopefully, the broader research community of what's happening in oral literature generally, get them interested and involved in the debates, so they don't say it's all about sciences, but you know, there's a role for humanities here. Okay, so our publishing plan, what are we doing? And where's this 5-minute warning? open access online from the site. We've got to have free digital editions of across the board, and can explain what's helped with that. Paperback and hardback editions. We've got the audio and the image library, and we've got this Creative Commons BY license, which I can go into a little bit more in detail. So the books will be sold on our site and fairly typically to other books, but also be available, you know, this is clearly not the right book, because it's not done yet, so I couldn't show you the right book. But that's the sort of thing. So we've got the paperbacks coming in at about £15, and the digital editions, various components, and those are all going to be retailing also from the Amazons and distributed to libraries, etc. Open access. You know, there is a feel that I talk to a lot of academics, and they say, you know, nobody's really interested in what I write. And if they were interested, they wouldn't understand it anyway, because they don't have a PhD in the obscure thing that I'm talking about. And so, you know, we put out 20 books in obscure PhD type areas, and we're getting it, you know, in June. So I just looked for the figures to June. So for the first 20 days in June, 18 days in June actually, we got just over 20,000 people viewing our free editions online for our 20 books. So, you know, that's 1,000 people a book. That's 500 people, you know, nearing 500 people a week are coming on from somewhere for some reason to read the geeky little book that has a print run of 200. That's a lot of people. There's a lot of interest out there. And so we need to be engaging them and bringing them in. And at present, the only people that do it are the museums. People like that. You know, we've got it there. We can do it. We can bring people in and engage with them. Second thing is we've got the audio material that's been brought through by on the oral literature site. It's in the background. We could play some of it if anybody's interested. But it's there. It's beginning to come that we've got that audio link that's there. We're also going to be having some of the images that were taken at the time as well. So there'll be an image archive as well. So then the book is going to be able to link through, and readers can link through comfortably to those and find those and chase those out. It's a Creative Commons license. I don't know if I need to explain Creative Commons. Everybody's happy with it. But BY license is the most general. It means anybody can do anything with the text as long as they say, thank you, Ruth. And so, that's for commercial or non-commercial reasons. Whatever they want to do with it, get out there, start involving it, start engaging with it, start using it. So, for example, the Fortnightly Review, which I know Alan has also a tie with, says, look, we would like to serialize it. So here we go. So they're going to serialize this, and every fortnight they're going to bring out another chapter, and it's going to be linked in with the stuff. And once again, we're bringing more people to it, and we're engaging this work. And I just point out, this thing at the bottom, I don't know if you see, that's actually got, Alan McFarlane's got a book. It's already being serialized on there, so nice to have him here as well. But that's the sort of thing that can start getting done with a BY license. Okay, funding. Now the other thing that was fun with this was, and I'm sure you've all got emails saying, join the Unglue campaign to fund this project. And so we experimented with the crowdsourcing here, and we said, listen, let's put it up there. Let's ask people to come in and see what happens. And what happened was that 270 odd people came along, and between them they donated $7,500 for this project to come ahead from all sorts of people. There's a band I never knew. Maybe you guys are better, but there's a band called Weezer. I don't know. Okay, it's a big band. They tweeted, said, hey guys, look at this. There are 890,000 people who follow Weezer band. Suddenly, I don't know anything about Weezer, but that's not a normal market for academic books. I wouldn't have thought. And so once again, one's engaging people who might not otherwise have been engaged. I also just highlight it because I think that it raises something that academia needs to be thinking a little bit more. We're so focused on the grant application and public funding. This is public funding, direct public funding. And there's interest out there. And if you engage the people, bring them in, there's interest to what you're doing and there's ways of generating revenue elsewhere. Okay, lots of other books coming out, four of them probably in this year, some more coming out, all the same idea, text, backup, audio stuff, same idea. I'm really interested in lots of other ways that we could be tying in these things together. We've got a platform, we've got to think about how can we really use that to interact the research with the background and the reading. And we've got a business model. Business models are always great things, especially for economists and especially in publishing. The business model is that you scamper for everything you've got. We're here, we can do it, we can put it out there, and we've got to think laterally rather than to say, listen, the only way we're going to fund this is by grants on one hand or by restricting access to knowledge and bringing it through under a publication. There are lots of other ways to do it. We've got to work together as a group and make sure that happens. But it's as a group that we'll do that. So that's my talk.